Thank you for hitting my play button again today. I'm Jeff Davis. Did you know we have our own storied, family-owned port house in Napa Valley, much like those in Portugal? Well, now, they haven't been in operation for centuries, but they are decades old. On today's podcast, I'll visit with Peter Prager of Prager Winery and Port Works. So come along, won't you?
He had tasted some California ports, and really, no one up here was doing them. We were basically the first port house here in the Napa Valley.
You know, I really enjoy producing a radio show that begins with this sound. Yeah, nothing like drinking and talking about port wine at 10:30 in the morning. Well, someone has to do it. The Prager story began as an idea, or dream, with Peter's father, Jim, in 1974. Peter took me through most of their ports as he filled me in on the family's history in Napa Valley, which followed the family's upbringing in Orange County, south of Los Angeles. So if you would, belly up to the tasting bar and listen in on our conversation.
We've been producing ports from Petite Sirah here since 81. And then in 82, we started using Petite Sirah from here in St. Helena. And for the last 20 years, we actually leased the land and the vines. And so we've been farming it. And so it's more of an estate. So we've been using the same vineyard for the Royal Escort for, you know, 30.
Palladini.
Palladini Vineyard. And the Petite Sirah that's in this one you're tasting now is also the same vineyard.
Right.
Yeah. It's great, great fruit. This is the Royal Escort. This is pretty much has been our flagship for many, many years. When people think of port, they think that, you know, ports are just, you know, they'll last forever, which a lot of them do go a very long time. But this is the one we actually build to really age. This will go for another 25, 30 years. Mm. And it's Petite Sirah. Reason why we use this grape, and we found this out just years ago, that when you're making port, you don't get a whole lot of time on the skins where red wine picks up its heavy body and its color and such. So, but with Petite Sirah, what's nice is we can crush the grapes, and we'll cold soak it overnight, maybe add yeast the next day. But in a couple days, we have the heavy red color, the body, the tannins, everything that's needed to age. And so Petite Sirah, I think, is just one of the best grapes to make a California fortified port style wine.
Now, what's the difference between these two? The Royal Escort is primarily Palladini, and it's not a blend, whereas the regular Prager port is a blend.
The port, yeah, it is Petite Sirah. Both of them have that same Petite Sirah, same vineyard in it. Whereas the Royal Escort's 100% of that vineyard, 100% Petite Sirah. And where to the port, we've blended to that Petite Sirah, we blended a grape called the Tinto Roriche, which is a traditional Portuguese name.
Nod to the Portuguese?
Nod to the Portuguese. Well, yeah, they really do. We've done ports using typical French varietals, if you want to call it, and then using the traditional Portuguese varietals. They're good blended together, but the Portuguese also, those varietals make really good ports, really, really nice. I like the way they come out. But we use what's available to us.
And this is darn close.
Yeah. I mean,
this is a beautiful port.
Well, thank you. Thank you. We are quite happy with the Royal Escort. In fact, we do declare vintages here from time to time, which in the world of port, when a declared vintage, what the port house is stating is this is only the very best port from only the very best year. And basically the grapes have to speak to us almost from the beginning when they come in. And we've only declared 9, but it's the Royal Escort that gets that term vintage on it.
It's like reserve in a sense?
Exactly, reserve. That would be the closest you could come to it.
Which, yes, is
right.
Subjective.
You know, some people put it on all the time. Others, people like us, don't put it on enough because sometimes we get a little bit too hard on ourselves. And it's like, Maybe we should have declared this one a vintage, but...
I was going to say, it doesn't say vintage on this one, but it's a delicious port.
Well, thank you. I mean, they're all really close. It's not like, you know, and then boom, this huge difference. But there's just a richness that we have, after working with this vineyard for, you know, 30-some-odd years, we have... we've come across, you know, the flavor differences and such, in a sense, making these wines. And we just know that, you know, sometimes when the grapes come in, we're going, ah, this is it. This is going to be good. And we got to keep an eye on this one.
How old were you when you first started really working with your dad?
Well, we started the winery in 1979, about that point. I mean, granted, we all had other jobs. I mean, we were sort of the indentured servants, as all farm children are, you know.
Right.
So we would work at other wineries and such, and then we would have to come over here and do the work here. Or we would just come home that night or something, and then Dad would put us to work.
Let's talk.
He used to find us in bars at like 2 in the morning saying, we got to press this tank out. Go, how the heck did he know we were here? He'd track us down. Scary.
Dads know their kids, right?
Dad knows things, yes.
Well, let's go to the very beginning. It all started with a vacation here in 74 when your dad, Jim, and Imogene came up here for...
Well, yeah, Dad used to come up. Dad, since I can remember, was always into wines. I mean, we're going back to even the 60s. He really liked wines. In fact, back in 73, he put a pick and shovel into my hands, my brother's hands, and about 6 weekends later, we were done digging a hole. I think it was like 12 feet long, 8 feet wide, and about 10 feet deep.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It was a big hole. It was a big hole. And he built his underground wine cellar at that point. This is when we were still living in Southern California.
So you were working with him before we even moved up here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. He was getting us into wines. And then when we moved up here... my first experience in the wine industry was in 77 with my younger brother, my dad, and myself. We went out to his friend's place up in Santa Cruz and picked grapes. So my first winery job for 2 years was picking grapes.
And how old were you then?
I was 18.
Oh, okay.
And then 19. Yeah.
Because when I saw that when he decided to move up here, he had 7 children.
Oh, yeah.
I pictured like 5, 8, 10.
No. My older brother was out of high school. We moved up here at the beginning of my senior year in high school, so I graduated from here in St. Helena, but I was only here for just that 1 year in the school system. And then my brother was a couple years behind me, so he had a couple years. And I had sisters who were, some of them were still in elementary school, but there weren't, there weren't any, thumb suckers or anything like that.
Because I thought that was a big risk to pick up your family and move up to do
a
winery, which, may work, may not. But at least you were a little bit older, so he didn't it wasn't quite the strain and responsibility there.
No, it wasn't. But the family would just pitch in. I mean, he would take my daughters, he would say, you're not going to school today, you're going to help me bottle. I mean, it was just like the old farm days. The family just did the farm work.
And honestly, if it were me, I'd be like, all right.
Yeah, fine. But I tell you, I'd rather go to school. After a couple of days of bottling, I'd rather go to school.
Oh, wow. Maybe he was trying to pull something on you,
I'll tell you, some of those first couple of jobs, I learned quickly what I didn't want to do for the rest of my life. So, Yeah, I mean, picking grapes was good. I mean, I was young and you could do it, and it was definitely an introduction to the wine industry, but I don't think I'd want to do that. I'd rather make it.
And you became the winemaker?
I became the winemaker.
And was your dad winemaking?
Yeah, my dad was the winemaker here when we started. And about the mid-80s, I decided, hey, this wine industry thing is kind of cool. So I was working it for other wineries. I decided... I really want to know how to make it. And again, as we were talking about before, what not to do, and if something's wrong, how to fix it. So I went to school and got my degree in enology from Fresno State, and came back, did a couple years here and then Dad just was ready to retire. So I took over as the winemaker.
Okay.
This was back in 95 or something like that. So I've been doing it for a while.
Talking about getting back to beginning years, You know, the first thing I thought was when you came up here, why did your dad want to do port when you could do Cabernet and Chardonnay? However, the first wines you made were Cabernet and Chardonnay,
Cabernet and Chardonnay here for years. We did. But from the very beginning, my dad was... He had tasted some ports from California. He was friends, I forget the professor's name, it was at Davis, and he went down to the cellar with him one day and tasted these California ports that he just thought these were wonderful. And he knew good fortified wines, ports, whatever you want to call them, could be produced here in California. Yeah. And really, no one up here was doing them. I mean, there was ports have always been made here, but no one who focused on fortified wines. Right. I mean, a lot of wineries, more and more wineries are actually making port these days, but they're making a little bit, maybe a few barrels for the end of their tasting in their tasting rooms and such, which is great. But no one, we were basically the first port house here in the Napa Valley.
Yeah, it must give you a sense of pride.
It does. It is different. You know, people will finish their case of Chardonnay before they finish their bottle of port, so it's a little bit more of a, you know, it's not mainstream. But we find that people are coming up to the valley now expecting to find wineries like us, you know, focusing on this style of wine, and which is a kind of a new phenomenon. I think it's great. What's old is new again, you know.
Right. Looking around at the rustic tasting and barrel room, they could almost use that line as their slogan. Prager Winery and Port Works. What's old is new again. He's winemaker Peter Prager. If you're not a fan of fortified port wines, they also make a very nice late harvest Riesling called Sweet Claire. Getting back to the port, we're now up to their Noble Companion Tawny Port, which offers flavors of butterscotch, vanilla, and dried figs, along with its traditional nutty finish. And with their Tawny Port, you'll find a darker color than usual.
I believe there's Petite Syrah in this one, which really, that red color just kind of grabs and stays. But this is a blend. Tariga and Tinta Roriche in it, and a little bit of Petite Syrah. Maybe even a little bit of Cabernet to it. Oh. Predominantly, this was bottled last year, March of 18. The bulk of this is 2007. So that was 10 years in the barrel. And then to it, we blended a little bit of 06 and 05. So the youngest in this is over 10 years in the barrel. And that's what makes it a 10-year-old Tawny.
Do you leave the little space of air in the barrel for that?
For 10 years, we never top it. For 10 years, we'll lose a good third of the production in making this wine.
A third,
due to evaporation. Those angels get a little greedy.
Right. The angel share, as
yes,
they call
the
it.
The angel share. But so this is, well, it is definitely our fastest selling port. For a variety of reasons. Not only is it really darn good, but I think most people, when they think of port, they think of this style. Because if they're out to dinner and they want a glass of port after dinner, there usually it'll be a bottle of Tawny Port on the back bar. The restaurants aren't going to open a good vintage port and let it sit. Whereas the Tawny's, it's, you know, that's the right price range. And there's not waste. It'll go for months as an open bottle, as do all ports.
Right. Yes, unlike regular dry wine, you can leave an opened port with some sort of closure on your shelf for quite a while because they're fortified, in Prager's case, with 169-proof unaged brandy, a clean, neutral spirit. With late-harvest white wines, like their Riesling, I usually chill those in the fridge. Up next, you'll meet the family matriarch who paid a surprise visit when I continue in St. Helena on the Wine Road. And we're back on the Wine Road. I found it touching that Peter's father, Jim, started a tradition of naming his ports after his grandchildren.
Well, yes, my dad was naming some of the wines after the grandchildren, starting with the Aria. My parents, back in 89, went to Portugal for about a month. And when they came home, Dad goes, boys, we're making white port. He just fell in love with them there. So about the time we were getting ready to bottle this, his first grandchild, a granddaughter, was born, Aria. So he dedicated this wine to his first grandchild. Sure. Then we do another dry white port for the second grandchild, another girl called Alyssa. That's a dry white port. We used to make a port using 100% Portuguese varietals. So he called that Tomas. It's from my son Thomas, but since it was Portuguese varietals, we had to give it that, you know, that name. And then we do a late harvest Riesling that we call Sweet Claire. I mean, there's a lot more grandchildren.
You gotta get busy because they
had 22 grandchildren. I'm not making 22 different wines. I'm sorry, just not gonna happen. So it was like started with the firstborn of each family. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
We never really made it to all the families though.
And that's all right.
Nice touch though.
Yeah. Well, Dad was just, you know, it was easy.
And again, I think we may have mentioned this at the beginning of the interview, but you're also bottling just a straightforward dry Petit Syrah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As we said in the beginning, you know, we started out some of the first one, you know, we did ports, but Dad also made Cabernet and Chardonnay like everybody else. But pretty soon, the Chardonnay fruit, the white port was selling twice as fast as the Chardonnay here because we're known for ports. So we kind of put the Chardonnay on the shelf. I think 89 or something like that, or 98, I think was the last time we did it. And then it just, all that fruit went into the Aria white port. Cabernet got too expensive. It was starting to get too expensive. And the tawny port, we needed stock for that because the ports were just outselling everything here. And then we have that Petit Syrah vineyard, Palladini vineyard here in St. Helena, which is 5 acres. And after it was replanted in 2000, maybe it was 99, it was replanted. All of a sudden, that vineyard was up to a much fuller production than it had in the previous years. And so we figured, we're already farming. We're already putting money into the wine. If we want to make a red wine, we already have it. Let's just make a Petit Syrah. And it's done well for us. You don't see that many Petit Syrahs here in the valley. And
it's definitely a growing in popularity, though.
It used to be one of the main grapes grown here in the Napa Valley.
Years ago.
Yeah. Years ago.
One thing we haven't talked about is where you're doing all of this. This facility is amazing. It's so rustic and old. Tell me about the age and what you know about this place.
Well, this building here, we constructed in 1982.
Okay.
The original winery started off in the back in a carriage house that was built back in the 1800s. I forget, 1860s something. This acre property and the property in front of us and where Sutter Home is over here, it all used to be one, I think, I believe, 5-acre parcel owned by John Tholeman, and he had a distillery here. In fact, if you look at some older maps, since we're not in the town of St. Helena, we are at the edge of the town of Tholeman here. In fact, if you go to Google sometimes, you'll see Tholeman, which is just before St. Helena, and that's what it is. But yes.
And here comes the matriarch. Hello, Imogene. We're right in the middle of the interview, so you want to jump right in?
I don't know about jumping right in, but I would like to hear to what is being said.
Oh, well, he's talked a lot about what's going on here already.
He would know. He's in charge of winemaking. This man makes a beautifully structured, elegant beverage.
Yes.
We're very proud of him and very proud of our boys who, of course, have something to say about everything, too.
Well, your husband, Jim, must have done a great job of making wine and in educating as well.
That's true.
I did have one question for you, though. When you guys came up here and you came here for vacation and he got inspired to move up here, how did you feel about all that?
At the time, we had 7 young children, and it was a little frightening. I grew up in Anaheim and married and moved to Santa Ana and Tustin. That was my home forever, and my parents were there, Jim's parents were there, and it was tough to leave. But for Jim, it was a hunger of the heart. He needed to open a winery. He needed to make wine. He loved drinking wine, but he also was very intrigued with the science of making wine.
Okay.
And he pursued it, would not let it go. So I knew that if
was it worth fighting, Emma?
Feared in any way, it would have been wrong.
Huh.
So the family all pulled together, and seven children, and mom and dad moved to St. Helena. And it's been quite an adventure.
Well, at least you can look back and know that you had a great success.
Well, yes, due to the solid family unit and a visionary husband and a wife who was willing to go along and work as hard as the rest of them, yes. I wouldn't say that it would be possible for everybody, but for us, it was okay.
Anything else that you can think to say to our listeners about your history here at Prager?
Well, I am glad that our sons and daughter, Katie and Mary, are in charge. I help, but I listen and learn from my children. Have for years. And we work together very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
That speaks to your maternal instinct, too, to keep them all together and working as one unit.
First of all, a wife and mother. That is true. Winemaker's wife and a winemaker's mother is secondary.
No, only for a little time of the year during harvest. Yes.
Right.
But for the rest of the time, no, we're always there.
I'm sure he had a passion for you as well.
Oh, my husband?
Yeah.
Yes. We were good together.
Okay.
We were good for each other. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And with the kids, it was nice to have all that free labor, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. And they were willing. Of course, they murmured. I know they murmured. Mm. I heard. But they did it. They did it. And good for them. It's serving them well now.
What a nice surprise to have you pop in here.
Well, I wanted to meet you.
Oh,
it's very nice
thank
to
you.
Meet you.
Yeah.
I'll hand this over to Peter now.
Okay.
These beautiful wines.
Oh, they are wonderful, aren't they?
What she enjoys is sometimes when we'll do the blends of the new wines ready to be bottled, and we'll take them in there and say, "Mom, this is what we're doing. This is it." And she gets that's when she's the happiest, is when the
I say, "Get out there and make some more."
Yeah, get back to work.
Great. Cracking that whip.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem like the kind of woman that would crack the whip.
Oh, no, she's still a mom. She cracks the whip. Okay. You just don't realize it, but that whip is cracking. All right, so this we call our Blonde Tawny. It's another white port. I don't know, we were discussing earlier how we have odds and ends after bottling. So after we do the Aria, we might have a couple barrels left over. So we'll just put it back in the cellar and let them sit. But anyways, the Blonde Tawny, this is made from Chardonnay and a little bit of Verdelho. A white port aged in the barrel for a little over 10 years. Huh. It's our 10-year-old Blonde Tawny.
Is anyone else doing something similar to this?
I can't say. No one is, because I don't know everything, what everyone's doing. There are people, I think, they'll make a white port. I don't know if they're aging them for 10 years, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. And
not a bad wine for considering it's a remnant.
Yeah.
Leftover wine. It's got a nice full mouthfeel initially, and then you get that brandy flavor.
And then it's like vanilla on the palate. Then you swallow it, you get that little bit of that brandy flavor. Not the brandy burn. It's not, port shouldn't hurt going down.
Right.
Even though you know there's brandy in it. It's a lot the same as, say, if you were ordering a well drink or a mixed drink in a bar. About the same alcohol content.
And then again, you do get the nutty flavor
and
afterwards.
The nutty flavor hits you, which are the oxidized flavors coming from the wine. Not a single nut was harmed in the production of these two white ports.
Didn't even touch it, did they?
No, didn't even touch it. So we've had people taste it, go, uh-oh, this is, I don't know if I could be having this, because they have nut adversity. And it's like, no, it's just, if you can drink brandy and Chardonnay, you're fine. And it works.
And you have more.
This is our second ever Colheita.
Colheita?
Colheita. What the dickens is a Colheita?
I'm guessing that's not a grandchild's name.
No. This is a style of port. Colheitas are single vintage dated tawny ports, at minimum 8 years in the barrel. In Portuguese, the word colheita means harvest, is what it means. So you can go through into your wine shops of the port section, and you'll see some bottles of colheita in the port section. But this actually started its life out as the 05 Royal Escort. So this is 100% Petite Syrah. In 05, we just had a huge amount of fruit. I mean, this is when our tanks were runneth over with wine. It's like, what are we going to do with all this stuff? So we bottled the 05 Royal Escort. I left, you know, they're not up there right now, but I left 8 barrels way up on top, which was hard to get to.
Yeah.
So I go, you know what? We have more than enough in the tank. So I'm just going to leave those there. You know, okay. You know, hindsight is really good. I'm glad we did it. But there was a little bit of laziness back.
That's a great thing about these kind of wines. You just forget about them for a while.
And we aged it in the barrel for nearly 12 years. And that's what the colheita is.
Wow.
That's what our colheita is.
Yeah, this is an 05, as you mentioned.
It is an 05. Mm-hmm. So 100% Paladini Petite Syrah.
Boy, it still has some color on it.
It does. It's got some tannins left in it, too. Not harsh or big,
yeah,
but
sure.
You get that structure. And of course, because it's there for so long, you know, it might have gone in at 18% alcohol. It came out almost 20%. And it did come out a little bit sweeter because what we lost was water. So it's like doing cooking. It's a reduction.
Yeah.
You concentrate the flavors. And that's really all barrel aging is. It's concentrating flavors.
It's a little heavier on the tongue.
I
don't know if I'd say thick, but thicker.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that thick,
it has more of a body
to it.
Right. It's just a little bit more to it because of the evaporation it experienced in the barrel.
And not a negative at all.
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
So this is why I like port, because it's an awesome way to have dessert without eating something.
Exactly, and, you know, port, you know, a good cheese and fruit plate and a bottle of, you know, and a glass of port.
Or a bottle.
But you walk away with having your sweet tooth satisfied, but not the guilt. It's not like you just, which are good to have sometimes, you know, those big, you know, death by chocolate lava cake things, you know.
Even by itself, it's a nice low-calorie dessert.
It is, especially the tawny ports. This is the one I like having opened up at home most times. This is, you know, I'll sit out at the grill, you know, and have a couple glasses of tawny. And it's just, it's very relaxing. You don't have to have anything with it. It gets you through.
Before I wrap up, I must congratulate you on winning the sweepstakes and best of class in just this recent San Francisco Chronicle wine tasting. Way to go.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We were very happy with that. It was, again, the Noble Companion, the 10-year-old Tawny, that did that. And we were very happy the way it turned out. And we're just thankful that we got it.
Yeah. That was the specialty wine category?
That was the specialty wine category, yes. To be fair, the dessert wine section is definitely smaller than the other. Okay, I understand that, but damn it, I'm going to take it. It's good.
Right.
Very happy. Yeah. Very happy.
Hey, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing. This has been wonderful. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, I really enjoyed talking to you, and you just kind of let me ramble on.
And it was nice of Imogene to stop in to say hello, and that affirms the fact that this is a family business, and with the grandchildren, it will likely continue through the ages, maybe someday ending up like a century-old Portuguese port house. I wish I had more time to talk about the other ports and the Petite Syrah I tasted that day. I enjoyed them all. Stop by and try them for yourself if you're in the area, and step back into a simpler and more relaxed era of Napa Valley. They're on Llewellyn Lane, just north of Sutter Home, on the southern end of St. Helena. If you're not in the area, you can order online at PragerPort.com, PragerPort.com. And by the way, Prager has been grandfathered in on the U.S.-European Union bilateral accord that states, as of 2005, American wines could no longer use place names such as Port, Champagne, or Chianti on new wine labels. Hence, Prager's legal use of the term port. That wraps up our journey for today. The music on this week's podcast was composed and performed by Claude Perrodin. You can find more interviews and interesting tidbits at onthewineroad.com. I'm on Facebook as On the Wine Road, and Instagram and Twitter at JD Wine Road. Thanks for listening. I'm Jeff Davis, and enjoy your travels on the Wine Road.